Here we go again, folks. Another show of the Suspendables. A little more serious this week. A little more serious, but there was some serious stuff to talk about. The Bill Peters situation, the fired coach in Calgary for what he said off the ice. Russ has some very strong opinions about this. Eric Kendricks is Russ's daughter's boyfriend, and he is just an amazing story. We talk about him for a few minutes, from where he was to where he is now as an NFL superstar. The high cost of hockey, right? It's getting to be too much. Rusty weighs in on that. And we had his daughter, Brooklyn, on just to find out the real story. And she told us which parent she likes more. You want to hear that? Drinking $3,000 bottles of wine. I sound like I just drank one myself. We got a bunch of stories coming up. Stay tuned. That and much, much more on The Suspendables. I'm starting. What are these shows I'm going to do without laughing? Hi again, everybody. Welcome to The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim, and Russ Courtney. The reason I'm laughing today, there we go. So that's our little thing now, okay? That's our thing, is Russ snapping the white claws. How we don't have him up as a sponsor yet, you know? They're probably going, you know what? This guy buys enough white claw, we'll cover our sponsorship fee. I like when you said earlier, so we sort of go over what we're going to do, but we forget, you know, everything that we talk about before we start to record. And of course, you're sitting there listening, the most impatient person in the world. You're like, hurry up, I want to open my white claw. How's it going, Rusty?
Good. I just got off the bike. I'm thirsty.
Oh, there you go. The Peloton. What's it called, the Peloton?
Yeah, with my girl, Allie Love.
Oh, she's still...
Yeah, we haven't broke up yet.
You haven't? No, it's your Peloton crush.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
We've been dating 4 months. She just doesn't know it.
Yeah, exactly. aren't there channels? She can change a channel.
I don't want this guy in my class anymore. Yeah, gone.
Enough of him, this creep. What's going on? Where are you? What part of the world?
I'm at Sherwood in LA, hanging out, freezing our butts off down here. It's been cold. We actually turned the heat on yesterday.
Minus 16 here.
Oh, well, okay. It's not that cold. Sorry, yeah, we're cold down here. We're not freezing cold.
I thought maybe you were in Mini for Thanksgiving. Where was Thanksgiving celebrated?
We celebrated here. We had a bunch of friends over. Yeah. And we will be all together over Christmas in Minneapolis. We leave on the 21st, and it's the only place that we can all get together. Eric's playing a Monday night game against the Packers, which will be freaking huge.
Right.
And Allie will be there, Lawton and Brooklyn and Paris and I. So we did it last year. It's great.
We're getting Eric on.
Yeah. We're going to try on the Sunday before the Packers game.
Right.
See if we can get him to they check into a hotel, so we'd have to do it a little earlier. Maybe we'll do it Saturday anyway.
You can get anyone to do anything, so don't tell me we're gonna try.
Okay,
get it done. I was reading up on him today. This is your daughter's boyfriend. Which daughter now? I forget.
Allie.
So I was reading about him because you'd mentioned we're gonna get him on maybe sometime, and this guy's he's not just another NFLer. The guy was the top collegiate linebacker. I think the awards, I read this earlier today. I didn't write a bunch of stuff down. I think he wins the Butkus Award, which would be after Dick Butkus. He got drafted in the second round.
Yep.
45th overall. He grabs a couple of million in a signing bonus, okay, when he first signs. And so I'm reading that. I'm going, well, that's nice, couple G's. $50 million contract last year.
Mm. Huh? Yeah.
Listen, Russ, I need you to tell him something.
Okay? I'm sure you will.
Okay, Russ, I want to be his girlfriend. But further to that is in his bio, so I don't know whether, if it's in there, I assume it's, I don't know if Wikipedia is allowed to put anything they want up there. I always wondered about that, you know, that because there's some personal stuff up there, but this guy's a hell of a story.
Yeah.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but single mother, dad took a bad turn and then came back. Does any of that ring a bell?
Oh my God. It's such a beautiful story. His dad fell on hard times, drugs and, alcohol. Mm-hmm. And he was a football player, played in the CFL, and then they had three kids. So Michael plays for the Seattle Seahawks, which is another great story because they play tomorrow in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Against the Vikings. So that's a nice family thing. But she took these three kids and got them into a safe neighborhood in Fresno, raised them herself, 2-3 jobs. And these two went to school. They Michael went to Berkeley, mm-hmm. and was drafted in the second round, has had a hell of a career, won a Super Bowl with Philly and Eric. And they have a sister who still lives in Fresno with her mom, and they're just wonderful, wonderful people. And she did such a great job. I mean, these kids are fantastic. She's fantastic. And now that dad's come back and he's remarried and he's on a great path, and mm-hmm. and they have a relationship. But Eric's mom raised those three kids, and the person who rented the house to her, I guess when she pulled up to the house, she had the three kids in the car, and she said, I can't make first month, and I don't have enough money for security deposit, but I'll never be late on my rent. And she lived there with those kids for 17 years. And wow. When they both had enough money after turning pro, they bought her a brand new house.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's a beautiful story. It's probably the first time I've ever told it and not teared up telling it. But we're hoping she comes to Minnie for Christmas too, so we'll be all together. But we don't see her a lot, but we really like the family.
And when you hear stories like this, my gut reaction is, you know, her boys are that's a great story in itself. You know how successful they became. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk to, you know, Eric one day when we can, but I want to talk to the mother, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, holy God, you know?
Yeah.
How did you do this? Secondly, it's not the first time you hear this, Russ, where successful athletes, pro athletes, including yourself, came up through some adversity, you know, in your case, mm-hmm. you lost your father at a young age, but his story's not... unique in the sense that you hear this a lot, where these guys live in inner cities, down and out, broken families, single mothers, you know, raising these kids, not just raising these kids, but they become NFL stars.
Yeah.
It's like, how does all that happen? And when she can't make rent.
Yeah.
You know, how does she move them around? How do they get, you know, crazy, craziness.
Yeah. There's some great stories out there. Anthony Barr, who's, Eric's best friend. They played together at university, at UCLA together. And he got drafted in the first round to the Vikings the year before Eric. The Vikings traded up in order to get Eric because of how well these two guys play together. It's like mm-hmm. they're twins. They have this sixth sense of where each other's going to be. They're freaking awesome together. And he's raised by a single mom and has a great story and has a charity, Anthony Barr does, to raise money for helping single parents. Mm-hmm. And then he took less money to stay and play for the Vikings and to be with his best buddy. So there's some really great stories. I know probably on every team there's a mom or multiple moms that did these great jobs with these young men that are all doing really well. And also not just in sport. I mean, but, you know, we're talking about sports because of Eric and Anthony, but I'm sure there's many, many other great stories.
How about you, Russ, when you say great stories? I mean, what about when you came up through the ranks in the NHL or guys that you played with? There's who solidified their career as an NHLer, but have a disadvantage background from us, you know, or from you. You must have come across a couple of that.
You know, Chris Chelios' story is pretty amazing. A kid from the States and, you know, San Diego, and that family moved to Australia for a few months because I think they had to, because he might have had a card game in the basement of his house.
Oh, no way. There we go.
Gus might have had a card game in the bottom of his house.
Right, right, right.
And had to go away for a while.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Like, you know, I think they moved to Australia for just like 6 months or something. But Chris Chelios' story is phenomenal. Great, great family, great parents. And, and Gus used to come to Montreal when I was there all the time. It was just awesome. But
he's Greek, right? Chelios is Greek.
Yeah, Greek, yeah. And I'm just trying to think of, you know, hockey is a tough one because it's expensive to play.
Right.
And so if you're a single mom with bunch of kids, it's pretty hard to fork out that kind of money for equipment.
You know, you bring up an interesting point about the price of hockey, which it is fully understood now that you're going to need 10 grand a year,
yeah,
right, for your kid to play, you know, midget hockey, right, to play normal hockey, competitive hockey, not house league. Mark Messier, I remember a few years ago when asked about he was involved in a project where they were trying to build a sort of multi-rink facility.
Yeah, in New York. I remember that.
I remember talking to him, and he said, there's something wrong where hockey has gotten so expensive. You know, ironically, he said, this isn't like tennis, you know, where it's a sport for the elite or polo. You know, that you ain't getting in this game unless you're rich, you know, to live in Wellington, Florida, where all these equestrian people are and stuff.
Yeah.
But he said, hockey's a grassroots sport, you know, and it's for everybody. And he said, they got to do something about the high cost. What are your thoughts, Russ?
Well, I know growing up, I always got used skates. I didn't get my first pair of new skates until I made the Victoria Cougars in the WHL. And that was just all we could afford. We had four kids in our house, so my parents bought us. I got used and hand-me-downs. And now it's like it's not good enough, it seems. You know, these kids are all have brand. Everything's brand new, brand new, brand new. And I think that's part of the problem where we don't pass down gear enough. Like there are secondhand stores. Play It Again, I think. There's a store called Play It Again or something like that. But when I was coaching, it was like every kid had the newest, best, no matter what the financial background was of the parents. The parents want to give their kids everything that they can. And sometimes they'll, you know, put it on their credit card and pay it later. But I think we have to figure out something with the equipment, make that more affordable. And maybe at the end of the year or at the beginning of the year, there's some sort of, you know, everybody meets at the rink and you pick out equipment, you know, and pay X amount, and then the kids who can afford new equipment, they're always going to buy it, but there should be an outlet for kids to go to the rink and get pickup gear that nobody's going to use anymore that's still in good shape.
Yeah.
That would be one way, I think, to allow more people to afford to play, because it's expensive to outfit your kid.
Or the hockey sticks, you know, like one guy said one time, say, look, just put a ceiling. On the, you know, sticks or what? What's the stick cost? $200-$400
I don't know. I'm so lucky because Lawton, you know, gets free sticks.
But I'm saying at the teenage level, you know, before they go to college, the guy's saying just say you can only buy $50 freaking sticks.
Yeah.
The one I always see, Russ, when I see it all the time, is you talk to these parents, and I know several of them whose kids may make it into the NHL. They're a couple years away, but they're all-stars in junior, you know, and they were great players, and they're coming up through the ranks, and they roll their eyes, right? Like, they go, don't ask. Do not ask what I've spent on my kid.
Yeah.
And a big part of it is the travel, right? And I'm saying, well, then don't travel. You know what I mean, Russ?
Yeah.
Like, they got to go to these tournaments. And I'm like, you know, you play in my hometown in Sudbury or where you're from, you know, or Calgary or Edmonton or Winnipeg. There's tons of hockey. Enough we can have a tournament every weekend with the amount of teams in the same city. What's with the travel thing? You know?
Yeah, there are some cities you shouldn't travel. I'll give you an example. In California, where our daughters played soccer, it's some of the best girls soccer maybe in the world. And we still have parents who want to go to Texas. They want to go to Washington. And I said to one dad, I said, until we've beaten every team in California, we're not going anywhere because the competition is perfect right where we're at. That's right. Stupid. And with hockey, parents or coaches want to go to all these tournaments to win the trophy, and they want to size up their kid against these other kids. They want to see if their kid's the best kid in the tournament or how, and just, you know, they mm-hmm. want to believe their kid's going to make it to the NHL. And one mom said it best. She had four boys, and she said, you know, this is my fourth boy. I've been through the four times. And she goes, the older the kids get, the more realistic it is that they're gonna not play at a higher level or the highest level. And she said, but when the kids are 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, every parent thinks their kid's gonna play in the NHL. And then by the time they're 16, they're like, oh, yeah, no, nah, they're not going anywhere.
Well, it's
and you don't want to kill a dream of any child for anything, but it does get realistic the older they get, whether they're good enough or not. But in the beginning, man, these 9 and 10 year olds, oh yeah, Quebec, let's go to the tournament, yeah. 10,000 each. Okay, I'll put it on my credit card. We'll figure it out.
It's crazy. You know, it's crazy.
It's yeah. nuts, right? And they can't beat Moose Jaw. You know, like they're like, it's just ridiculous. So
yeah.
There's some great. Coaching classes mm-hmm. That you take. There should be, I don't know if there is or there isn't, but there should be a parent class. Like you if your kid's going to play any sport, then all the parents have to come and listen to these stories and be yeah. and here's the realistic, or here's the cost,
yeah,
and here's the realistic chances. But
yeah, anyways. They should have those games, Rush. They should have you have to pick the section, right? And the one of the sections should be delusional parent who thinks their kid's going to make it in the NHL. I mean, it's always, this yeah. is not a new topic, you know, but
yeah, yeah.
It's been going on for years, you know, that, yeah. that, you know, parents freak out about, yeah, but he may make it one day.
Yeah. Well, you know, it comes down to it's, look at the parents love their children. We all love our kids and we want them to be the best at whatever they do, but forcing them into something is not a good thing. And
no, not going to work.
You wanting it versus, you know, hopefully the kids want it more than the parents do, because that's tends to be the biggest problem. Is if you're waking your kid up to go to practice, probably not a
right.
good thing.
Because
right, when right, I was right. a kid, I didn't have an alarm clock, and I was freaking gung-ho when my dad was driving us on Saturday mornings to father and son hockey, and it was a free skate from 5 till 7 in the morning. And I only missed a couple, and one was because of behavior.
What'd you do? What happened?
Well, apparently the babysitter said we weren't, we didn't behave. So I woke up and there was no, my dad was asleep, and I was like waking him up, and he goes, we're not going today. You didn't, but you weren't behaved last night. Go back to bed. And I was like, oh
yeah.
God.
Yeah. The old yeah. grounding thing. Yeah. You're yeah. done.
I was a little mischievous.
Yeah. We're going to find out about that. Actually. I want to, you know, speaking of that, because you're full of shit, right? We always get this, we're getting this filtered thing from you about your life and all this stuff. And if we really want to know what Russ is all about, let's talk to one of his daughters. So this is Brooklyn, right?
Hello, yes.
How's it going, Brooklyn?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So tell it. What's your deal? What are you doing now? Russ always tells me about you guys. It's like you're training for the Olympics. What's happening? What's your story?
I'm a junior in high school, and I play soccer and run track, and I committed to UCLA.
Committed?
Yeah.
So juniors, what's that? Grade 11 for us?
Yeah, grade 11.
Grade 11. Okay. And then you're going to UCLA. Mm-hmm. You live in LA now, of course. Were you born there?
Yeah, I was born in LA, and then we moved to Victoria when I was 6 months old.
Oh, okay. So you're and now you're back in LA.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to talk about your dad, Brooklyn, okay? We want to get... There's got to be something wrong with your father. There's got to be some things that really a lot of us would like to know. Because he can be a bit of a bullshitter, Brooklyn.
Okay? Yeah.
All right? So... Tell us what like you said, there's a few things we should know about your dad that he would never tell us, but we would like sort of the real story.
Well, one thing is he's obsessed with food. Like it's insane. I'll wake up at 7 a.m. for school and he's like, "What do you want for dinner?"
Oh.
Like, I don't know. I haven't even had breakfast yet.
Yeah.
And he asks that every morning. What do you want for dinner? What do you want for dinner? Me and my mom are like, we don't care. It's 7 a.m.
Yeah, who gives a shit, Dad?
Yeah.
What we're going to have for dinner? I'm guessing, yeah. Unless you want White Claws. That's the new drink around the house, is it?
He's thrown away beer for the rest of his life and will only drink White Claw.
Yeah, he's on the White Claw. What sort of bugs you about your dad? What sort of the, besides that, the food thing, what's sort of quirky about your father? Something a little strange that we should know. What's one of his bad habits?
A bad habit.
Yeah, he must have some. What's it like? What else bugs you about your dad?
When he's with my sister, they're the exact same, and they just bump heads so bad, and they just they'll love each other 1 second,
yeah,
and then they'll just be screaming at each other because they're the exact same person, but they won't admit it.
So would you know how to get under your dad's skin if you had to? I'd like to know this because I want to get under his skin.
Under his skin?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. What could you do? What happens with them?
It's about food. It's always about food. She'll be like, I want to go here, and he won't. So then they'll fight about it for hours and make the whole family uncomfortable. So when we go to Minnesota, that's what's going to happen the whole time.
Oh, when you go to Minnesota at Christmas?
Yeah.
He'll be driving everyone nuts.
Mm-hmm. I think the only reason he gets in fights is because of food. I can't think of anything else.
Did you when you were younger, did you have to get punished? What did he have bad punishments for you guys? What was his?
Bad punishments for my siblings, but of course I was the best child.
Oh, so you were
never punished me. Yes,
you were the dream kid.
Yeah, I never got in trouble because I just would watch what my siblings would do, and then I would just do the complete opposite.
What? Give me an example. What did they do that you had to watch for down the road?
Well, when they're in high school, if they snuck out.
Oh, yeah.
Or just, like, would talk back or anything bad like that.
So, listen, Brooklyn, before we let you go, okay, you can be honest with me?
Yes.
You like your mom more than your dad, don't you?
Come on. I can't answer
you can whisper it. No, just whisper. Just, okay. Come on. Really, your mom's a lot cooler, isn't she?
Sometimes.
Yeah. You like your mom more than your dad, don't you? Yeah.
I won't answer.
Brooklyn, we're going to let you go. Thanks a lot for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Foodie. Foodie, yes. Your dad. Yeah, your dad's a pig. He's a pig on the food. You're going to have to straighten him out. Good luck in school.
Thank you.
Here's what you do. If school's going bad, Brooklyn, okay, quit.
Okay.
Join a gang and take up smoking. Okay?
I will.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
You too.
She was Rusty, she was saying you're at loggerheads with Allie. And Allie, because you and Allie, when you get going, right?
Yeah.
Shit happens. What is she doing? What's she doing to get under your skin?
Well, we're a lot alike, so tend to butt heads a little bit. But we, I'm trying to be better. I've always tried to breathe. But, I love my kids. You know how much I love my kids.
I do, yeah.
If one of the kids and I tend to get in an argument, it would be Allie and I. But I can't even remember the last time we had one. But it's generally over food, where we're going to eat.
That's what she said. Yeah, she said you're obnoxious. You're obnoxious about it, is what she said. The food thing. What's with waking her up at 7 in the morning, Russ, going, she said you wake her up at 7 and go, what do you want for dinner?
Well, when I moved to Maui for 3.5 years and I got into this routine of wanting to know what was for dinner, right? So planning ahead, like what are you going to take out of the freezer and this and that. And it's just like, okay, what what do you guys want for dinner? I grew up with, I don't know how you guys grew up, but my mom was like, okay, everything was the exact same Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, sure. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It never changed. It was the same freaking meal.
Right.
Ours rotate. There's not, it kind of moves all over the place, which I love. But
right.
I just like to know what we're going to have for dinner that night.
Right.
That's it.
And oh, sure.
It seems okay. It bugs my family like crazy that when I'm in the morning and they're like half asleep going, hey, what are we doing for dinner tonight? So anyways,
it's
bit of an issue.
Yeah. Your kids, you bug your kids and your kids, you get under your kids' skin by bugging them about food, you know, about what you're going to eat. And I get all upset with my kids when they're, you know, stealing cars and punching the shit out of teachers. I'm kidding. Listen, we got to read an email that we got, and I don't have my glasses, but I'm gonna bang this off because it's funny. It's someone you know, and it comes from a girl named Trish Gregson, I think. And it says, "Hi, this is Dish, but I think she must mean Trish. This is Trish and Duncan. I'm not one to write in, but I have to tell Russ a story." Because he mentioned Bear Mountain in the last episode, which we did. First of all, I'm 53 years old, a woman listening to you two blokes, but I'm a big fan of hockey, and I feel that Russ and I, sort of, were neighbors at one point. Although he never mentions the small little town, we lived in Yubo. Okay. I'm pretty sure we played hide-and-seek together.
Wow.
At the Halversons. She said you'd know that name. My parents owned Norm's Market. Anyhow, fast forward. I manage the Ladysmith BC Liquor Store, home of Pamela Anderson, and I mentioned the podcast to one of my truck drivers. He told me that one day he was delivering up to Bear Mountain when it was first developing. Picture this. It's a long sloping hill to the resort, so he's huffing along in his big truck. And some douchebag in a sports car comes whipping around a corner and cuts him off coming up the hill. The guy who got cut off gets out of his car and gets in a scuffle with the D-bag. It turns out to be Jeff.
Oh, my God.
Your brother. Yeah. Russ's brother, after all. After it all blows over, Jeff has a good chat with the truck driver. He told me Jeff couldn't be a nicer guy, but was madder than shit at the asshole. Love the stories, guys. Would like to hear some guests in the future. Okay, well, we just had our first one.
There
Brooklyn.
You go.
Yeah. Some guests in the future. But you two are pretty entertaining. Keep it coming, boys. This is Trish.
That's so funny. Yubo, all four kids. My dad worked in the mill in Yubo. After he quit hockey, he started working for BC Forest Products, and he was started out as a log scaler. And we moved to, well, my parents lived in Yubo at the mill. He worked there. All four mm-hmm. kids were born. We were all born up there. My sister was born in the hospital at Yubo. There was freaking one room in the hospital. So
now where's Yubo from Victoria? How
it's far? On Lake Cowichan.
Oh, okay.
So it's way up there. Not too far, like an hour and a half, an hour and 45 right. from Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all were born there and then moved to Victoria. And so I was really young. And I don't remember. I remember Yubo because we'd go back every year a couple times. But anyways, it's funny because I met somebody in Maui when I was there, and she started talking about her uncle, and she goes, "Yeah, my uncle lived on a lake on Vancouver Island." And I went, "What lake?" She goes, "Lake Cowichan." Yeah, and he worked at a mill. I go, "In Yubo?" And then she goes, "Yeah." And his name was Bajan. I go, "Uncle Bajan?" I go, "That's my freaking uncle." And then she goes, "Oh my God, your sister and I used to play together, and you had a dog, and his name was Stumper, a black lab." It was so crazy. So it's kind of like this story where, you know, it was a small village of, you know, people working.
Sure.
And
I heard we have to pause for a second because I heard your dog yelping. And after talking to your daughter, if I was a dog, I'd be a little nervous around there that I might be served up for dinner. You know, you talk about I got two hilarious stories, quick stories. You talk about, you know, blasts from the past when you're like, Uncle so-and-so, oh my God, you know. I remember when I moved to Edmonton, I was there years ago. I moved in 85, but I was there in 78 with my family when my old man was Speaker of the House, and we traveled out here during the Commonwealth Games. And then years later, I came to Edmonton in 85, and then I went back to Ottawa, but I came back to Edmonton in 05. So that many years later, and I joined a golf course, and I'm sitting around talking to an old guy, and he says, "What's your name?" Anyway, I see you here all the time, golf course, every day. I go, it's Jim Jerome, you know? And he goes, oh gosh, he says, that's the only guy I ever knew. He was kind of famous. He came here I met him years ago, and I took him golfing, and it was all fun, except his fucking shit-nosed, spoiled-ass kid was with us. And it was me.
No.
Yeah.
He goes, probably had hair then, and then you lost all your hair. He didn't recognize you.
Yeah. He was like, he was deadly serious. He's like, I met that guy. We had a good afternoon, except for his snot nose.
No.
Anyway, that's a funny letter. Keep the cards and letters coming in. I guess, Russ, we got to talk about a couple things. The big story, can't ignore it.
Bill, see you later, Peters.
Yeah, so the quick story is a former player, Peters, who was the head coach up to this week in Calgary, former player comes forward, Alou, he may pronounce it differently, black guy, who comes forward and says out of left field last week that Peters came into the dressing room and yelled at this guy because he was playing music.
Hip-hop.
Rap music and or whatever it was, and Peters told him, I don't like that N-type music. Turn down that N-type music. Absolutely brutal thing what the guy said. And Peters got fired. The Calgary Flames took their time investigating it. More and more people have come out. Peters apparently kicked guys. He's since apologized, and then the team asked him to retire, which he did. And there's been a bunch of fallout from this story. Other players have weighed in. Rod Brindamore corroborated a story. Ronnie.
He was the assistant coach, I guess, on the bench, correct?
Right. And and the owner of Carolina, you know, when they interviewed him about that, when Brindamore spoke out, he said, if I would have known that, I would have fired the guy right away. And then someone said, well, how come he didn't know about it? Why didn't anyone tell him? Ron Francis has come forward and said, I did tell him. So there's been a lot of shit about this stuff coming out. What's your take on the whole thing, Russ?
Well, it's horrible. So twice I saw a kid on another team call my kid the N-word on the ice, and one was right in front of the bench. And when he was like 12, 13 years old, and then another time we were frickin' shaking hands with the San Jose Sharks minor league, you know, like a band, it was like 13, 14, and a kid, this Lawton's teammate was behind him and said, this kid said, F U U N, N word. Yeah, something like that.
Jesus.
And then he came up to me and said, that kid just called Lawton the N-word. I went in the locker room. Lawton had crocodile tears coming down his cheeks. It was fucking awful. One of the worst things I've ever seen in hockey. You know, shaking fucking hands, not battling in the corner. There's no excuse for it. But how horrible a human being was that fucking kid? And I was talking to Ron McLean about it via text last night and today, because they did a big show on Hockey Night in Canada called The Conversation. And they had Anson Carter on, and black kid who played in the NHL. And they had another kid, Stewart, on. They had a girl, and they were, it was just conversation talking. And so I start texting him, and I said, racism is taught. where it's not inherited. You don't, you're not born. Nobody's born a racist. You're taught. And these freaking kids, you know, it came from their parents, obviously. And, and from their parents and their parents and their parents. But I have no, because of the experience I have with my own child, I have no freaking sympathy for this guy. And I think his apology was a fucking joke.
Right.
And I hope he never, ever works in hockey again. And I don't think it's over for him. This kid has hired lawyers. And if he can show, because he says I was off to a good start. And then they sent him to the East Coast Hockey League. And he goes, I was 20 years old, and this guy's calling me the N-word, the N music, whatever, you know, turn this shit off. And then he buries, if he buried him, and if he can show that he buried him, and this kid, and he backs it up with his teammates. All, now his teammates are saying, yeah, he, Bill Peters said exactly what this guy said. Then, you know what? The road for him is going to be, it's not going to be good. And, I just feel for this kid I never heard of him until this came out, and I'm not trying to make light of who he is, but I mean, his story, he just tweeted like, he was talking about Mike Babcock being fired. And then I think he tweeted something about Peters.
Right.
And then everything's starting to come out. So it's brutal.
Yeah,
it's absolutely brutal. And then he freaking punches and kicks some NHL players on a bench. I mean, give me a break.
Right.
I mean, I played for some real pricks. And I don't think I ever saw anything where, you know, there was some close where guys stood up and were like verbally arguing, but I never saw physical contact between a player and a coach.
Yeah. So, I mean, times have certainly changed, you know, and for the better, that people are putting their foot down, right? Saying this is unacceptable behavior. This thing was a gross, gross deal. You know, you're married. If people don't know, your wife is black, Paris, and your children are and mixed. And to hear that stuff is, it happens way more often than people think. Rust is, there we go, little white claw.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with you that he certainly the tone of his apology, a written apology, sort of started out okay, but he never really apologized to the guy in the thing.
No.
Is there any side of you, Russ, that says the guy made a big mistake and he deserves a break if he can come clean?
No. No, because the humiliation that he put on that kid in front of all his teammates scarred that kid for life. And then to send him to the minors, you know, when he was off to a good start, and because he was playing music that he didn't like, and then racially attacks him, like turn that freaking... The kid, he wasn't a white kid, he's a black kid, and it's most rap music is 90% of rap music, I'm assuming, is from usually the black community. I know that Eminem's a white kid who raps, and there's other white kids that rap or whatever, but majority of rappers are black. So he pulls him out because he's black and uses that racially horrible racist fucking word and just scars the guy for fucking life.
Right.
I mean, it's brutal.
Yeah. I have one thought. I've got many thoughts about it. I totally agree with you. I think the guy's done because of that. You know, that he's going to pay the price. He's going to pay the price. He's going to dearly pay the price.
I don't know how you come back for that. From that.
You're going to be an example now the rest of your life. It's not the way you want to go out. You know, what this guy did. I love what you had to say, that a lot of racism is, and all of it, as a matter of fact, you said, is learned. It's learned behavior. And if I want to say anything about, I like rap music. I listen to it, Russ. But to stop that shit, to stop this, you know, what Peters did and the like who do that stuff, is maybe they should stop using the N-word in rap music.
Now I wish we had Paris on the show.
Yeah. Well, we can do that another time. But because the kids are listening to it, Russ, is my point, and to your point.
And I used to agree with you on that. Again, Bill Cosby, who's another scumbag, right. But he said, you know, those black kids should stop using the N-word and
right.
But what my wife said it is that is such a bad word that the black community has taken it back and now they own the word. And then we can't say it, something to that effect.
Right,
and
right.
I'm not a expert on it, but something about them owning it. And but you know what? I did not like rap music. Mm-hmm. And then I watched that movie, Compton, was it Out of Compton or the story yep. of, and once I watched that movie, I'm like, fuck, I'm in. I had a friend who, Brian Turner, who started Priority Records. He's out of Winnipeg, mm-hmm. moved to LA, started Priority Records. And I'd go to his parties and we'd be listening to rap music in Malibu and da da da. And the guy was super successful, sold it for a few hundred million bucks. And I just was like, I don't like this music. I didn't understand it. And now I enjoy it. I don't like some of the really hardcore aggressive
right.
wording on the show mm-hmm. I do appreciate the music and where it came from now. I think that anybody out there who doesn't like the music, they should watch the story, the movie.
Well, I will.
I think that it'll probably sway you to understand it a little better, and what they went through was just brutal.
Right.
It's a good movie.
It's awful. Russ, guys you played with, Ron Francis, Rod Brindamore, sort of responded to this thing as well, backing up this guy's story and weighing in, saying the guy's right. I got examples of that. Are you okay with that, Russ, that other guys are coming forward now saying he kicked me too, or I was there when it happened and I need to let you know that I was there as well?
Well, when somebody, a story like this, so Rod and Ron are part of the story now, and mm-hmm. and Rod Brindamore told the truth. He's like, yep, this is exactly, he answered the question, boom, 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 boom. And now Ron Francis, I think the problem I think Ron and the owner have is Ron is saying, I told the ownership, and the ownership says I didn't know anything about it. And that's a separate issue. But I love Brindamore's direct, yep. And we handled it, and I thought we handled it great. And then Ron Francis backed it up and said, never heard of it again. Mm-hmm. But I think they were dragged into the story.
Right.
It wasn't like they were, telling on somebody. They were backing up the truth of what they knew. Mm-hmm. And how they dealt with it, and they weren't ignoring it. So I applauded them for, you know, because some people go, well, we handle it, no comment. I don't want to talk about it. I thought they both did well with how they explained what happened.
On the, well said, Rusty, as usual. On the lighter side, so I always throw it out there on Twitter to, if they have questions for Russ, tell them we're taping today. We tape on Sundays, and someone says, speaking of,
oh God,
ask Russ to rate his Montreal teammates from hardest working to laziest and send the list to Mike Babcock.
Oh my God. That was brutal.
There is someone has asked Russ that you had mentioned, I don't remember this because I don't remember an hour. That you spent some time down in Newfoundland and Nova Scotia, and they wanted to know about that, what you were doing there. Was it Did you play down there?
No, I was there for a fundraiser, and I'm involved. It used to be called Gold Medal Plates, and now it's called the Great Canadian Kitchen Party. Yep. And so I was there for, you know, why not fly from L.A. to St. John's for a party? So, yep. I mean, frick, it took. It was hilarious how long it took to get there, but it was great. I went there for, I believe I was there 2 or 3 nights. Barney Bentall was there.
Right.
We're at this event, so right. I'd been to other events, so I helped them raise money, and so I've done a bunch of things with the
right
with them, and this guy, I immediately freaking love him. He's a wine guy, so I meet him at Pebble Beach, and right. He says, come to Newfoundland. And so I get to Newfoundland, I go to his house, and he has a wine cellar that is one of the sickest wine cellars I've ever seen. So I'm texting Barney Bentall, and Barney loves his wine.
Right.
So I'm like, for those who don't know Barney Bentall, he's a great Canadian musician.
Sure.
He's phenomenal in Canada. He's
what
huge.
Was his band?
Stevie
will know. Our editor will know. He's listening right now. No, the Heartbreakers? What was it?
Heartbreakers. Barney Bentall and the...
I think it's Legendary Hearts.
Barney Bentall and the Legendary Hearts?
I don't know. But we were at Chris... So I met Chris Hickman's house, big developer in St. John's.
Right.
Great guy. And we'd met at Pebble Beach. And the story at Pebble Beach is it was... We did a fundraiser there for the gold medal plates and mm-hmm. raising money for Canadian Olympic athletes. And I was there with Val Bure and...
Val Bure, wine guy himself.
Yeah, he's a wine...
Married then, to the actress. What's the Cameron or whatever her name is? Yeah.
So we do the fundraiser in Pebble Beach, Ian Leggett, Val Bure, myself, and we meet this group of guys from Newfoundland. And Christopher Hickman is a big wine guy. So I'm in the tap room in the pub, and I get a text from Ian Leggett going, get into the dining room now, the restaurant.
Right.
So I go in there, and here's 4 or 5 guys from St. John's, Newfoundland, sitting around smoking in the restaurant, California. It's like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
And Ian Leggett's like waving me over. I go sit down, and they're like, Ian's giving me the wink, wink. And they're like, hey, nice to meet you, Russ. Nice to meet you, you know, and shaking hands. And,
right.
And
good to fucking meet you, Rusty.
Yeah,
how
good to
you,
fucking
bye?
Meet you, Rusty. We're fucking Habs fans here, you know. Fucking,
right.
He's a Toronto fan. We're Habs.
Right.
So I'm still in awe of these guys smoking. And then I look over above the table. They're in a booth. And there's Screaming Eagle. Anyone who knows wine, Screaming Eagle is like $2,800 a bottle. It at
Yikes.
From the winery, not in a restaurant. In the restaurant, they always jack it up.
Right.
So they're like, do you like red wine? I'm like, yeah, I'm at the right table. So we start drinking wine. The guy's bill at the end of the night was like $27,000 to $30,000 for the wine.
Of course it was.
So I said to the waiter, I go, how, I kind of, he came by me pouring a glass of wine. I go, why are you letting this guy, why are you letting these guys smoke in here? And he goes, the tip is going to be bigger than the fine. They can do whatever the fuck they want. So yeah. Anyways, I'm in, so I, Chris Hickman and I hit it off. And
right.
I go to Newfoundland for another one of these charity events. And I'm in his wine cellar. I'm texting Barney Bentall, who's going to play that night at the event or the next night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the next night. So I said, Barney, you've got to get over here. And we were drinking some Bordeaux, and I don't even know how much they were a bottle. But anyways, that's what I was doing in Newfoundland.
There you go.
2 or 3 days hanging out with Chris Hickman and his buddies and just having a great time.
Someone asked how you and I met, and my recollection is, down east, when you bring up this story, there was an event called the Wayne Gretzky and friends, and it was Wayne and Brett Hall and Mario played against Mike Weir in an event down east when there was a big high-tech company that sponsored that thing. And I got in a day early. You guys were flying in on the taxi, as I call it, one of Wayne's taxis. And I was hammered in the bar. It was in Halifax. And I said, I got to go to bed. It's like 1:30 in the morning. And I'm sort of staggering through the lobby, embarrassing myself, spit coming down my face. And next thing, I almost shit when you guys come flying through the front door going, where are you going, Jimmer? Come on, buddy. And we stayed up till 4 or 5 in the morning. And that's I think that's how you and I met that many years ago back then. So
that was a good event. It was fun.
The other thing is... Brad Marchand got called off the ice because he sort of ran into an elbow the other night, and it stunned him. It sort of staggered him, and they pull him off for this sort of concussion protocol, and Marchand's reaction to it is, you know, that's brutal. I was fucking fine. Now you're taking me out of a game, and he's kind of since apologized, but he was very vocal about it, saying, this is ridiculous that they're able to do this. And one of my thoughts is, what are you going to do, Russ, in these, say, a nothing games? Who gives a shit if they stop the game and pull a guy off because they think he got concussed? What are you going to do in real big games? What are you going to do in, like, a Stanley Cup final?
You can't have your cake and eat it, too. I mean, we're trying to get the, they're trying to protect the players. I mean, the NHL's had a lawsuit against them from players that felt they didn't do enough for them. So where does it start? Where does it end? And now there's rules in place, and players aren't going to like it. And that's too bad, because the NHL is protecting themselves so that he cannot come back at them later and say, oh, you didn't do enough. So you know what? The rule's the rule. And if they pull you out of the game because they feel like something's up, I mean, they hopefully they can get you wherever they go. And they do a test, and then you're back. But you know what? It's a business, and it's millions and millions of dollars, and it's for the health of the player.
Right.
So I love the way he competes and stuff, other than the licking thing when he was licking players. But
fuck. That was gross.
He wishes that would go
bad
away,
move.
I'm sure.
But I tried it. It's a bad move. It doesn't work.
No, but he, you know what? He's a competitive guy. And he said some things in we all, you know, when we're all fired up, we say stuff that we regret.
Right.
Or when we're drunk. But, he since took it back. I mean, he said the guy's eating burgers and pizza up watching the game or some.
Yeah, yeah.
Made reference to the guy eating and not paying attention or something, but
yeah, call him a dumbass.
You can't have guys suing the league and then the league not turning around and doing something to protect the current players. It's just, I mean, it is what it is.
If and I know your brother suffered from concussions.
Suffers
from concussions, and there is a side of me, Russ. You may not like this, but there is a side of me where some of the onus, if you're going to play in the National Hockey League, is the league totally 100% liable for guys who get injured that way, Russ, who get concussions?
Well, if anyone should have led the lawsuit against the team, it should have been Jeff and someone from the NHL, very, very high up, maybe the highest position, said, if anyone should have sued the league, it should have been you. And he wouldn't join the lawsuit. And Jeff said, I played the game this way, and I got pretty much what I deserved in return, and I paid, and I'm paying the price, but I knew what I was doing, and he refused to join the lawsuit against the NHL, and they were trying to get him to join it, and he said no. And so he would agree with what you just said, but when the league is now trying to protect the player and the player complains about it, then that's where I have a problem. I'd say, you know what? Shut the F up, because they're protecting themselves, but more importantly, they're trying to protect you. Right. So you can't, it's a tough game, yes, but I think they're trying, I think they've done a good job to try to eliminate these headshots. I mean, it was getting so freaking bad. And I think now, you know, guys, I just think it's better that the guys aren't, they're not going after the heads like they right. were. And they just got, and I've said this before on different shows, where they just got to keep hitting guys in the pocketbook until they, till it's almost 100% eliminated.
Right.
You know, the cheap shit.
Good show, Rusty. On, before we leave, a couple of funny questions. Someone said, was Brad Marsh the slowest guy ever in the league? Russ?
Yeah, it was like he was wearing the skate boxes, not the skates. I played with Marshy. He's a good guy, but it wasn't he couldn't play today because he just, you know, he just wasn't fast. But man, he could hook and hold with the best of them.
Someone maybe not for this week, but unless you can off the top of your head, someone said we need more Harold Ballard stories. They heard us a few shows ago.
Oh yeah,
talking about Harold. Russ, is it really true? I want to know before we go. Are hockey players really into soap operas? Is that a myth?
I think because Gretz was that, you right. know, it really,
really,
it really got a lot of play, but I don't remember anyone playing with anyone. I think Trevor Linden was into, soap operas, but yeah, oh. I don't know a lot of guys. I mean, we went to a lot of movies. I mean, players love going to movies. So it was a big thing the night before a game, you know, go to a movie.
Rusty, we're out of time.
It was a three-claw show.
It was a three-claw. I noticed that.
Oh, and, you know, Instagram's a beautiful thing. And before we go away, Denise Clark, Wendell's wife, was in Hershey. And she posted yes. a picture with a White Claw in her hand. And I quickly little, hey, drinking the Claw. And she goes, my first one. And I go, well, get ready. Because next summer, when you're up in the Muskokas, you'll be getting rid of the beer. And you'll be, the fridge will be full of Claws. So,
geez, I might have to go back and drink it. Some guy sent me a funny picture. He had all these cans of White Claw laid in, like, it looked like a lasagna dish, you know. And he called it, not a casserole, he called it a White Clauserole.
Yeah, the Claw Nation is big. You should look it up. But are you going to end the show with a joke?
Yeah, you know, you always, I told one earlier today on a podcast, but it was one of my favorites. So, because not everyone listens to both podcasts, but if my was a guy who said he was in a charity run, like, you know, a turkey trot run, one of these charity runs. He said he was so slow. He got beat by the kid the charity was for. we covered some serious stuff, Rusty. We don't want to do this all the time, but well spoken, well said. Your points are bang on. We're going to be back each and every week. You've been listening to Jungle Jim Jerome and Russ Cardinal, and this is The Suspendables. Another White Claw, Russ,
before we go? Well, I might have to.
No, you're good. We might have to teach you to stop burping when you're talking with her. It drives me nuts.
I gotta learn how to hit the mute button.
Go back and bother your kids about all the food. Thanks a lot to your daughter, Brooklyn, for coming on. We'll talk to you next week, everybody. Take it easy.